Cooking TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Okay, the ideal voice. Dark hair, blue eyes. I go for blonde.
Gonna make you want me. Spring means nothing.
What else?
Steph's sense of humor.
Yes, yeah. Definitely's got to be funny. And as far as what he drives, oh yeah, definitely got to get along with my parents.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily have to drive like a brand new cool car.
Not
a hunk of junk either. Somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle.
He's got to have a job. He's got to have a future.
Right.
Bye.
What's new for fall? By the Despericitos. That's going back to 2002 from their record Read Music, Speak Spanish. And welcome, my friends, to the B-side of episode 92. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. It's about 6 minutes after six on this Monday evening, first day of fall, the autumn equinox. And what we're here to do on the B-side is, at least at this point, until it expands or morphs into something else, possibly, as we pick up the rest of the news that I wasn't able to cram into last Friday's show. And so we got a little bit of ugly stuff to go over. And again, when you listen to these B-sides, you may go, why isn't he talking about the completely collapsing economy and this $1 trillion bailout deal? We'll get to all that ridiculousness this coming Friday. So let's just still dig back into the last week and get a little bit of news. So first one we're going to hit up is posted up under GWAT. FWV, National Guard, Nuke Discipline, Provocation, and Suicide. And the first article in this post is from the Associated Press, West Virginia, National Guard mobilized. An Army National Guard squadron based in West Virginia is being deployed, but Captain James Bowen says the specific destination for the 150th Armored Reconnaissance Squadron is yet to be determined. Some of the unit's 570 soldiers are from Ohio. Bowen says around December 1st, the squadron based in Brush Fork, West Virginia, will be sent to Fort Pickett in Virginia, then to Camp Shelby in Mississippi. After that, he says the guards will head to Fort Irwin in California until they're sent overseas. This would be the 150th second mobilization in the past 4 years. And if we jump to DOD buzz, generals to be disciplined over nukes, Defense Secretary Robert Gates will announce a range of punishments for at least 5 general officers and possibly several colonels for lapses connected with the nation's nuclear weapons. Sources tell DOD Buzz the announcements are expected on Tuesday next week, which would be tomorrow. Gates had to intervene personally and ordered the review after sensitive nuclear parts were sent mistakenly to Taiwan and a B-52 bomber flew across the country carrying 6 armed nuclear cruise missiles, of course, from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. Last week, a panel of August experts led by former Defense Secretary James Schlesinger said they'd been surprised by the erosion of controls over nuclear weapons since the end of the Cold War and recommended that Air Force Space Command be folded into a new Air Force Strategic Command and urged a range of other measures to ensure airmen dealing with nukes feel they are part of an important mission. Yes, they are. They're just compartmentalized and don't really know that mission. If we hit Danger Room for something disturbing, as always, from them, CIA Chief Hayden, of course, we tickle terrorists with missiles. The CIA doesn't just attack terrorists to take them out. Sometimes the spy agency strikes to tickle enemies into reacting. CIA Chief Michael Hayden told the annual Air Force Association conference, with a link for you, quote, "Today we routinely use kinetic force bombs and bullets attacks, not just for its own effect, but to create a response that will allow us to collect more intelligence. We use military operations to excite the enemy, prompting him to respond. We create and benefit from a highly virtuous cycle. Operations generate opportunities to learn more about the enemy. The intelligence gained creates opportunities for follow-up operations, and so on." So he's basically saying, it's exactly, we provoke terrorism, so we have some bullshit to go fight. And on and on and on. That's, you know, doesn't realize that's what he's saying, but that's, he's pretty much laying out the truth. And P2OG, of course, again, one of the programs to provoke terrorists into doing something. I think in other fields you would call that, you know, entrapment or... But if we move to Russia Today, which I notice we've been visiting a lot more lately, an expert says Al-Qaeda is in league with the U.S. Well, this goes along quite well. In a video released last Monday, Al-Qaeda leader slammed Tehran, accusing Iran of giving way to the U.S. by allowing it to invade Afghanistan and Iraq. Some experts believe the terrorist organization is trying to undermine support for an Iran amidst continued speculation about possible military operations against it by the U.S. In a 90-minute video shown on Al Jazeera TV channel, Al-Qaeda's deputy leader Ayman al-Zawahiri doubted the Iranian government's anti-American stance and claimed Tehran was in alliance with the crusade against Muslim nations. Quote, "This statement is absolutely in tune with the interests of the USA," said Alexander Yakuba, head of Cross Media Communications Analytical Department, to RBK Daily website. Yakuba believes al-Qaeda's goals in Iran coincide with those of the American administration. A weakened Tehran will help the organization boost its control in some Iraqi territories where Iran currently has influence. There's also the issue of a religious divide. Al-Qaeda are Salafists, pure Muslims who consider Shiites heretics, he said, claiming that Shiite-controlled governments in both Iraq and Iran are thwarting the organization's efforts in the region. Al-Qaeda is in league with the U.S. Another one from Press TV, or rather jumping to Press TV. We're in Russia speaking of Iran. Now we're going to the Iranian press to speak about 16 U.S. troops commit suicide in Iraq. 16 U.S. troops from the unit of an airborne division have committed suicide inside a military base in Iraq, security forces say. Iraqi security sources have revealed that 21 U.S. troops had committed suicide inside a former Iraqi airbase 27 days ago, Fars News Agency reported. According to the sources, the 21 troops were treated in a hospital, but only 5 had survived, and they are in critical condition. Security officials said they used potent narcotics to kill themselves. The troops' motivations for the suicide are not known, but according to Iraqi sources, the servicemen belonged to a unit of the U.S. Airborne Division that was behind the massacre of several Iraqi families, mostly women and children, in northern Baghdad, said Ali al-Baghdadi, an Iraqi security official. Suicides took place in the soldiers' dormitory after the dinner time. Quote, the bodies of the U.S. troops became misshapen in such a way that they looked like 5,000-year mummies, said a witness. According to Iraqi officials' estimates, some 600 troops, including senior officers, have committed suicide in Iraq since the invasion of the country in 2003. Half the suicide attempts have been successful. And that sidebar reminds me, I know when I was reading The Copycat Effect by Lauren Coleman, he said they don't like to use the term successful for suicide because that attaches some sort of like, hey, good job, you did it. I think what is that they were completed? I forget. I digress. More geopolitics, more ramping up, more itchy trigger fingers around the world. As again, of course, we'll get into the deteriorating situation in Pakistan as well. But right now, we've got the U.S. Embassy in Yemen attacked, 16 killed. This is going back to Wednesday, September 17th. Attack against embassy blamed on al-Qaeda, of course. So this from Danger Room. A car bomb and rocket attack on the U.S. Embassy in Yemen has killed at least 16 people, including civilians and Yemeni security guards, the AP reports. Yemen has long been viewed as a haven for jihadists, the Times notes. It became special concern for the United States in 2000 after al-Qaeda operatives rammed the USS Cole in Aden Harbor on Yemen's southern coast, killing 17 American soldiers. The U.S. compound has also been the scene of occasional political violence in previous years, including a large demonstration against the American-led invasion of Iraq in March 2003, in which 2 Yemenis were fatally shot and dozens injured. In April, the State Department ordered all non-essential diplomatic staff to leave the country after an attack on the embassy claimed by al-Qaeda. A residential compound used by U.S. oil workers in the capital city of Sana'a, S-A-N-A-A, had also come under attack from rockets at that time.
A series of bombings outside the U.S. Embassy in Sana'a, Yemen, with as many as 5 explosions rocking the compound, killing at least 16 people. A U.S. official says the attacks appeared carefully planned. Yemeni authorities first responding to the scene were ambushed by snipers.
The attack bears all the hallmarks of an al-Qaeda attack, where you have multiple vehicle-borne devices along with personnel on foot. In an attempt to try to breach perimeter, actually get inside.
All American personnel are safe. One locally employed embassy security guard was killed, along with Yemeni troops stationed there and some of the attackers. The compound, seen here in file footage, has been targeted before. It appears some of the attackers were dressed as soldiers, armed with automatic weapons, rocket-propelled grenades, and at least one car bomb. This witness says there was an exchange of machine gun fire, then a big explosion, followed by more gunfire and explosions in other areas. Yemen is the ancestral home of Osama bin Laden and has struggled to put down al-Qaeda-linked Islamic militants. The White House condemns the attack and says it is a reminder of the continuing threat from violent extremists, both at home and abroad. Lee Powell, The Associated Press.
Recently, we saw how important it is with the attack on our embassy in Yemen. there were some security forces that lost their lives there, and we send our condolences to their families. This attack is a reminder that we are at war with extremists who will murder innocent people to achieve their ideological objectives. One objective of these extremists as they kill is to try to cause the United States to lose our nerve and to withdraw from regions of the world. And our message is that we want to help governments survive the extremists. We want people to live normal lives. We want mothers to be able to raise their sons and daughters in a peaceful environment so they can realize the hopes and dreams of a better world. And I want to thank our diplomats who stand in harm's way. I thank our military who stands in harm's way. And I want to thank General Petraeus and his family for being so dedicated to our great country.
And that was President Bush commenting about attacks at the U.S. Embassy in Yemen. Bush making the remarks while meeting with General Petraeus in Washington. And that was, again, on September 17th, Wednesday. If we shift wildly to presidential selection 08, I haven't been getting too much into all this lately. I'm just letting all the tabloid bullshit kind of play out. I think the next interesting moment will probably be when we see some debates. Having said that, the latest episode of Collateral News, collateralnews.tv, is episode 59, History Lesson for Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin likens her experience as small-town mayor to that of community organizers, except that you have actual responsibility. In a country with a strong tradition of community organizing, we felt it necessary to point out what some of those organizers have accomplished, like founding this country.
Before I became governor of the great state of Alaska, I was mayor of my hometown. And since our opponents in this presidential election seem to look down on that experience, let me explain to them what the job involves.
Hi, I'm Brendan Swire. I've done my share of community organizing in Philadelphia. And since Sarah Palin and John McCain seem to look down on that experience, let me explain what the job involves.
I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities.
Yeah, right. Let me show you some community organizers. People that Sarah Palin feels didn't do anything for their communities. This useless fellow is Ben Franklin, a community organizer in Philadelphia. Franklin helped fight the American Revolution. He also established the first fire department, the first library, and the first fire insurance company. In 1747, he organized our first militia. In many ways, Franklin conceived the American nation. As such, he was utterly useless compared to a small-town mayor and PTA president named Sarah Palin.
Let me explain to them what the job involves.
This clown is Thomas Paine. A community organizer, Paine galvanized the American colonists to revolt against the British with pamphlets like Common Sense. He also coined the name of our country. You know, the United States of America. His accomplishments as a community organizer pale in comparison to the accomplishments of Sarah Palin, the small-town mayor.
Sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities.
This useless sack of flesh is Thomas Jefferson. His pitiful accomplishments as a community organizer include writing the Declaration of Independence, which hardly bears mentioning when you think of everything Sarah Palin has done. Jefferson was a delegate to the First and Second Continental Congress. Sarah Palin obtained funding for a bridge to nowhere. This schmuck is Paul Revere. One of those do-gooder community organizers who don't hold a candle to Sarah Palin, Revere alerted the citizens of Boston that the British were invading, which is why no one remembers him or his catchphrase, one if by land, two if by sea.
Actual responsibilities.
And these are the Minutemen, the cream of the crop of colonial volunteer militias, who were the first armed militia to arrive or await a battle. nowhere near as accomplished as Sarah Palin, who apparently held off the Ruskies in Alaska, these community organizers are remembered for some unknown reason. And here's a lithograph of the Boston Tea Party, in which angry colonists, outraged by unfair taxes, raided a British ship and threw all that tea into Boston Harbor. Thankfully, we have people like Sarah Palin to point out that these community organizers don't have anywhere near the responsibility of the PTA president.
Except that you have actual responsibilities.
I am so thankful to Sarah Palin for showing me the light. Though it makes you wonder, if Sarah Palin and John McCain were calling the shots in 1776, we might still be paying for everything in shillings and pence. Thanks, Sarah.
Episode 59 of Collateral News, History Lesson for Sarah Palin. But now let's jump way back to another president. A lot of new JFK news, as almost seemingly always. JFK, lone gunman doubts, Maryland's box, and the unspeakable. First, from the Dallas Morning News, use the latest scientific techniques to poke a hole or two in official findings on the Kennedy assassination, and suddenly you have lots of new friends and lots of enemies. 45 years after President John F. Kennedy was killed in a Dallas motorcade, the details surrounding his death remain topics of endless debate for those who see conspiracies and those who disagree. Cliff Spiegelman will testify to that. The professor of statistics at Texas A&M University organized a six-member team that compared the composition of bullet fragments from the JFK shooting with other bullets from the same manufacturer. The group found that those fragments weren't nearly as rare as the government's expert witness concluded in 1976, when Dr. Vincent P. Gwynn, G-U-I-N-N, determined that all five fragments came from two bullets fired by Lee Harvey Oswald. A third shot missed, because once they realized that James Tagg had been hit with shrapnel, they had to... there was three. The claim was made that those five fragments could only have come from two bullets, Dr. Spiegelman said. Our research showed it could have been two or more, and if it is more than two, there is an increased likelihood that someone else provided one of them. And there are links in there for you to go adventure around other things from the Dallas Morning News and to read about Dr. Gwynn, Medicine Man, and Project Euclid, as well as others. But if we jump to the New York Post, letters from JFK to Marilyn are in a box. This is kind of a longer article, and it's very kind of tabloidy, conversational, you know, slangy. Marilyn Monroe's re-resurrection in the current Vanity Fair tells about her private papers stashed in a secret filing cabinet, which had an even more secret drawer. It tells of her never-before-seen super hush-hush treasure trove. It tells of her hidden diary entries, personal belongings, intimate celebrity correspondence, and how some of that, namely the John F. Kennedy letters, appeared to have disappeared. Didn't exactly totally disappear. Could be, I know what happened to him. And again, the writer goes on to talk about it. The important thing is actually to go check out the latest issue of Vanity Fair. You can see Marilyn's big profile shot there on the cover. I always like to try and throw out a little bit of news. I know when James Douglas came to Portland to talk about his new book, JFK and the Unspeakable, I went there and recorded that, and that whole talk is up for you. I think it's had hundreds of downloads now, which is awesome. So anytime other places do reports on his book, it's interesting because he is a Catholic peace activist. A lot of Catholic press have covered it, so it's kind of interesting. So this is from yourdiocese.com. Beyond conspiracy theories to why JFK assassination matters today, a veteran peace activist and author, James W. Douglas, is among the few people in the world today qualified to write a book such as JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. It's not just a rehash of the many conspiracy theories that have floated around literally since President John F. Kennedy was assassinated November 22, 1963, although Douglas did an admirable job of winnowing the wheat from the chaff in that regard, too. Of course, those who advocate for the various conspiracy theories will continue to argue in support of their own theories. And so that's just a little quick bit from that, but it's funny, it seems to downplay the fact that in the book he completely proves conclusively that JFK was an inside job. If we jump to the New York Times, this was a film I had not heard of. Virtual JFK, Vietnam if Kennedy had lived. So, that title pretty much says it all, though the movie itself says nearly not enough. Directed by Koji Masutani, this speculative, provocative, frustrating, and finally unpersuasive historical gloss races quickly and all too lightly over the major political crises that JFK faced during his aborted presidency. Laos, Berlin, Cuba, Vietnam. In what may be the most aggressive big-screen shine job since Oliver Stone's much-derided 1991 hagiography, JFK. Hinged partly on the British historian Niall Ferguson's controversial notion of virtual or counterfactual history, crudely, it didn't happen, but it could have, the documentary embraces a view of Kennedy as a president more inclined toward peace than toward war. Divided into sections and illustrated with a wealth of archival material, including some of Kennedy's lively, sometimes combative press conferences, the movie zips through one crisis after another, interspersed with guest appearances by the likes of Fidel Castro, Nikita Khrushchev, and Robert McNamara. Every so often, a spectral-looking James G. Blight, a professor at the Watson Institute for International Studies at Brown University, the movie's sole talking head authority, pops up against a white backdrop to make the same argument to the camera. So again, guess I'll try and keep an eye out for that flick, Virtual JFK, Vietnam if Kennedy had lived. Now, finally, back on more scientific fronts and examinations. This from UKY, the University of Kentucky, UK. Scientist re-examines JFK assassination evidence. Is it time to re-examine the Kennedy assassination? New scientific evidence indicates that Lee Harvey Oswald did not necessarily act alone. Simon Schether, S-H-E-A-T-H-E-R, Simon Schether, professor and chair of the Department of Statistics at Texas A&M, has revealed that evidence used to rule out a second assassin has fundamental scientific flaws. So, last Thursday, September 18th, he spoke at the University of Kentucky about new compositional analysis of bullets reportedly derived from the same batch as those used in the crime. As the 45th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination approaches, Schether's research offers to shed new light on this national trauma. Dr. Schether's work is an excellent example of the importance of mathematical approaches to real-life situations, said Vincent Cassone, chair of University of Kentucky Department of Biology. Cassone and Schether were colleagues at Texas A&M. So if we jump to WLAX, we can hear more about Schether and JFK evidence.
Bullet testing brought into question during Bolling's appeal could have huge implications on the assassination of President Kennedy. A Texas professor speaking at UK right now says there's good reason to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the only one responsible for the murder. LAX 18's Chase Kane has the story.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing story.
Through his research, Simon Schether has lended a fresh perspective to the decades-old debate over who shot JFK.
And I was a five-year-old child in Australia, and I didn't grow up with all of the theories.
Now a statistician at Texas A&M, Schether reopened the evidence against Lee Harvey Oswald and looked specifically at the test run on the bullet from the crime scene by a respected chemist.
He found three of the fragments matched, like three pieces of an M&M together, and two of the other fragments matched.
Meaning that there were two bullets and just one shooter, Lee Harvey Oswald. But what if today's more advanced bullet testing found that there were really three bullets? Well, that could mean that Lee Harvey Oswald had an accomplice.
We're pushing for the case to have the bullet fragments from the JFK assassination reanalyzed. They're in the National Archives, and have them reanalyzed. I think it's more likely than not that there was a third bullet in play.
And for this statistician, the odds of that are great enough that he thinks history needs a review and possibly a rewrite.
Justice is always a good thing.
Covering the news in Lexington, Chase Kane, LAX 18 News.
uploaded to YouTube.com by me, Media Monarchy, YouTube.com/Media Monarchy. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I'm sure they're actually talking about the same study, but one article focused on Simon Schiether and the other one talked to Cliff Spiegelman, but they're both statisticians from Texas A&M University, re-examining the JFK evidence. If we move now to my man from Portland, Oregon, right here, Alex Ansari and his show Outside the Box, episode 169, was originally broadcast on September 11th, 2008. Alex reported the latest news live on the 7th anniversary of 9/11 and took some phone calls. So that whole hour-long show is posted up, as always, every week or so. And also, anytime he does new shows on We the People Radio Network, his latest episode from September 10th is linked up there as well. But let's listen to a couple seconds, a couple minutes from Outside the Box, episode 169 with Alex Ansari.
People are confused. They're looking for a perfect solution. They want to, you know, you to just lay it out for them. It's not that simple. 7 years after 9/11, a lot of people can't actually deal with what actually happened that day, with who's actually involved in that, and get involved and trying to force their belief system down other people's throat. And it's a losing game. It's a losing fight. That's not how this works. It's all based on free will. That's how they're going to have to come to some of these conclusions. They're going to have to go through the fire first. So we are here. We are the watchmen at the door. There are more people that will be activated in the future. There'll be more children born that understand exactly what's going on, that are receptive to the new information as the old system collapses, the old belief systems, the old energy. That's why we're here. That's why we will continue. No matter how many people they kill, no matter how many people they lock up, doesn't matter what country, there are no countries. The Earth and what's going on with it is really interesting. We'll talk about the magnetic field a little bit later on. You're involved in something big. You're not in Kansas anymore. There are some major changes coming to our planet. You got to suck it up, pull up your bootstraps, stand up, open your eyes, get off your knees, and actually stop bitching and start a revolution of the mind. You understand why you're here. What's going on here? I mean, don't you think it's a little bit odd? Why don't people ask why? A three-letter word, why? Why do I feel like I'm in so much pain? Why am I drinking so much? Why am I cutting myself? Why am I buying so much? Why am I jumping from relationship to relationship? Why am I eating so much? Why am I so unhealthy? Why am I so depressed? Just ask the question why. You're willing to look for the answers and face the truth. You got to face your truth, man. You got to look yourself in the mirror and deal with it. You got to deal with it. People will feel good all the time, like heroin addiction, like the mouse and scientific experiment, pressing the button over and over, releasing a drug into their brain until they collapse because they're addicted to that constant feeling of pleasure. Well, we are kind of in that scenario. We're living in a bubble. We're not experiencing a lot of things that other people are experiencing, and so until that happens, things aren't going to change. So we all need to prepare ourselves now and have a little bit of acceptance and a little bit of at least attempt to gain some wisdom from this experience that we're in. Understand why it's happening. And again, people, unless they hear a clear-cut solution or a way to just deal with it, so understanding why they're going through it, they just shut out and tune out because it just gets so big beyond what they comprehend. People get very scared. They think you're getting religious when you start talking about the universe cycles, you know, people being here for a reason, and they start getting really afraid.
I couldn't say it any better myself. Alex Ansari on Outside the Box, number 169. Finally, this was one that I did really want to get to last Friday, but ran out of time. But this is a funny one. This is from the Associated Press. Cops catch special agent from the U.S. Illuminati. It wasn't the preferred way to enter the Knoxville Museum of Art, but Richard Anthony Smith told police he was on a mission. The 25-year-old Knoxville man called 911 from his cell phone before dawn last Wednesday, saying he was trapped in an air conditioning duct leading from the museum roof. Knoxville police spokesman Daryl DeBusk said, "Police and firefighters reached the roof, found a rope and cable, and followed them to a vent shaft. Peering inside, they spotted Smith about 45 feet down. Mission failed," he told them. Hoisted up and read his rights, Smith told police he was a, quote, "special agent from the United States Illuminati, badge number 0931, and that he had rappelled onto the museum from a helicopter, a police report said. He said he was following orders to, quote, "defuse and confiscate," end quote, a Soviet-made nuclear warhead, specifically a MIRV 6SS 22AN warhead, according to the report. The bomb supposedly was hidden in a blue plastic cow sculpture in the museum basement, he said. However, Smith told officers his agency called while he was in the air vent limbo to say it had made a mistake and the bomb might be in a Memphis museum instead. Police charged Smith with aggravated robbery. He was being held on $2,000 bond at the Knox County Jail. Authorities said he did not have a lawyer. Fortunately, he was able to reach his cell phone, DeBusk said, or he may not have been found for quite some time. Cops catch special agent from the U.S. Illuminati.
Try my best to hide.
to 1997 from their record I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One. That was Yola Tango with Autumn Sweater. And so, fitting for this first day of fall, and we're in for an interesting fall, to say the very least. So, I thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate that seemingly 50 plus or so people download the show every week or twice a week sometimes. So I really appreciate it. Don't hesitate to hit me up on IM or an email at Yahoo, mediamonarchy@yahoo.com, or IM me at Media Monarchy, so we can all reach out. So I'll be back Friday, this Friday, September 26th, with episode 93 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. I thank you for listening, like I said, and like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yep.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.